Hello, and welcome back to Searching Inward, a podcast brought to you by Restore Small Groups here in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm George, joined with Scott and Anna, and today we want to talk about out of the shadows into the light. And the central question to this episode is, do we run from vulnerability or do we embrace it? Because to move out of the shadows into the light, there's only one way there. It's through vulnerability. And we all love that, don't we?
It's
the one thing we all want to avoid. But the only way to arrive into the light is to be more willing to do that. So the first step out of the shadows is to know how just the voice of condemnation is keeping us stuck there. So, Scott, this was obviously, we're getting to the end of this this book, Journey of Transformation. We got this day and one more day, and then we're at the end. So this kind of came right before the last chapter. Mm-hmm. So what were you thinking when you you wrote this day?
Just how powerful the negative pull or pushing of condemnation, which I believe is the heart of shame. It's like I've talked about earlier, that shame is the loudest voice in my life. It is. It screams at me. I still sometimes have nightmares while awake, and the nightmares that are so terrifying for me are ones that are shame-based. And it's interesting. I've had people in groups talk about these nightmares that they have, like where they'll be in a crowd and they don't have any clothes on and things like that, you know, just the exposure that they feel, which is the power of shame to give us nightmares, and they wake up just trembling, you know. So my shadow life is where I hide. But where I hide is where condemnation and shame have its greatest strength on me. But if I bring it into the light, like Anna was just talking about, as much as I'm terrified of that, it is the path of healing, which again is what Dr. Bradshaw said in Healing and Shame Advise You, that we are petrified, terrified of exposure if we have struggled with toxic shame. Yet the only antidote, he says, to toxic shame is exposure. Get it in the light. But I just would want our listeners to know that you have to pay very close attention to, not all people are light. Mm-hmm. You know, if I share my vulnerability with, I can actually get hurt worse. So you have to be very attentive to who am I allowing in that space. And again, what Brené Brown says, wherever you can find those places in those small groups and communities, she says, sprint to them, run to them, because she knows it'll save your life.
Anna, how's shadow and light play out in your life?
Well, I think for me, living authentically is very important to me. And I think I have learned through just the course of my lifetime how exhausting it is to constantly try to hide the parts of myself that may not be acceptable, or to edit everything about the way that I show up in the world so that it is pleasing and inoffensive to people. That is literally exhausting. It takes so much energy. And I have found that, like, to just be free in who I am, to be unapologetic for the way that I'm made, flaws and all, and to just live in a way that is very honest, man, it is so freeing, and it energizes me in a way that, like, feeling falsely accepted never can, right? When you're living in a way that you're conditionally accepted because you know that you're crafting a persona for the outside world that may not be authentically true to who you are, that is really, really tiring to keep up on a continual basis.
That's very poignant what you're saying, how shadow and light works in relationship. Mm-hmm. Where, yeah, how exhausting it is to have to constantly think what everyone else thinks or what they're going to think about you and how you're responding, or, you know, how you're showing up in the relationship. That definitely could wear us out. And just how exhilarating I think it is, and how uplifting it is to maybe come to realize that when you're no longer hiding that shadow self and you are loved exactly as you are, there's nothing exactly. more life-giving in that, right. you know? It's like, so when you finally give up that game and you find, oh, I got, you know, these relationships and they're the ones that, that really matter. Yeah, it does make life a little more easy. And
oh, it's
more,
a game changer to be seen yeah. and to be known and to be fully accepted exactly as you are. Man, that is life-giving beyond anything else I can think of.
And it's worth the risk because, like, absolutely. What we all want is to be loved exactly as we are, the, you know, authentic right. selves to be loved. So I think it's worth the risk to find out who's really, it who is. Really loves and, us, you know, and who really cares about right. us as, mm-hmm. you know, the authentic people that we actually are. Like, that is definitely worth the risk. But vulnerability is tough.
It is. And as Scott says, it's so mm-hmm. crucial to make sure that you are engaging your discernment, that you are being vulnerable with people who are emotionally healthy, who have a growth mindset, who are safe, who are reciprocating equal amounts of vulnerability. If those things aren't present, that's probably not going to be a safe place for you to be your fullest, most vulnerable self. Not saying that you're, you know, we want to live as honestly and authentically as we can, but we do have to understand that not every place and not every relationship is going to be a safe space for full and complete vulnerability.
There's yeah. places to practice that, right? Like to yes. learn how to do that. And you definitely start.
Like, for example, a restore small group. There we're you go. Starting was, new groups in 2 weeks, y'all. It's not too late.
you know, Scott. It's interesting. I was going to say that the shadows, mm-hmm. there's two ways to looking at light. And one is, I just saw this just a couple of weeks ago, that some people feel that when the light gets shined on them, it's like an interrogation light, you know, where they mm-hmm. would shine a light on you. Where were you? What were you doing? What, you know, trying to pin you down in guilt. And then there's the other kind of light where you're lost in the shadows in your darkness, and it shines a light on you to find your way out. And it's loving and healing. It's so, you know, relationships are interesting. Some relationships I have, they'll give me input if I'm vulnerable to them, and they'll be, it comes across as condemning, and it's critical. It's criticism. It hurts. Mm-hmm. And then I have other relationships where, well, and that's probably the key, is that some of them are really not relationships or just people that I'm, you know, engaged with. But the true relationships I can be honest and vulnerable with, and their input is received as helpful and life-giving and affirming, and it gives me life. One gives me life, the other one pulls me down. So, and I'm very fortunate in the last 25 or so years to build a small group around me of people. And again, that's what they say. It's the quality of the relationships that give us life. And in the quality relationships where I can talk about the really hard things and I'm not in and being judged for it.
Mm. You know what I was thinking about when you were talking is like, it's like being on a path, which we talk about, right? Like that's what the journey of transformation is. It's staying on a path, a healthy one that's healing and we're moving toward wholeness. But I was envisioning like, it's a difference of someone with a flashlight coming and shining in your face in the dark, like putting it up right up to your face, you know, it's like how unhelpful that would be. You know, that's kind of the critical condemning voice, but a much more helpful way that light works is it just kind of shines the next step, the next place to move toward. And so that's what I was thinking when you were talking. Light could be helpful or it could be blinding in a condemning way. Yeah. Well, Brené Brown, she said, you quoted her in this, that she says the way out of the shadow is by believing that we're enough. And it essentially comes down to worthiness versus shame, right? Mm-hmm. Do we really believe we're worthy of being loved, you know, our most authentic selves, right?
I think a fear-based life, a shame-based life is what so many of us live because it's so entrenched in our society. Is so systemic that, you know, I get a grade card when I'm little and you know, if you get good grades, you're praised. And if you don't get good grades, you're shamed, you know, and just getting a bad grade card is shameful. And those who got, I remember, I know they still do it, but if you're on honor roll, they listed you for the whole school. And so I think I got on honor roll maybe one time in my life, you know. So
my wife, Debbie, was telling me this morning she was having a memory of fundraisers at school, in elementary school, and they put up the name of the kids who made the most up on the board.
The best salesman.
Then they list the kids that didn't sell anything. And she says, you know, I think that was like manipulation, like public shaming, you know, to get you to sell something. Shaming. But that was just interesting. She's 50 and she was having that memory. But just, yeah, how much of our culture uses shame as a way of motivation. That's just so unhelpful. That's not what we're talking about here.
No, it's actually just the opposite of that, is believing that you are worthy, that you are capable. And you know, we are enough. But coming to believe that, George and Anna, that is not an easy path. And I don't believe, ultimately, I do believe it's one that we must take a part in on our own, but I also know that it's impossible to do it alone as well. Mm-hmm. I need the collaborative voices of people who, and this is why it goes back to being fully and truly known, because if I really let you know everything about me and all the hard stuff, and you say, you know what, Scott, we are for you and we believe in you and we will never, ever abandon you. That's when I know I've been loved. Because with warts and all mistakes, all flaws, here I am. And you say, wow, you're enough, Scott. You're great. Matter of fact, you're more than enough. That inspires me. And so we talk about in this chapter how the ego, I believe, is the center of the negative voices and kind of it clings to wanting to control by doing. And this goes back to what we talked about in our last podcast, and Anna was saying, you know, we're more focused on doing in our society because that's how we're praised, that's how we're judged. By what we do, because one of the first things you meet somebody, hi, I'm Scott. Well, what do? You know, and when you tell them, and you're like, okay, how can I pray? How can I position myself so they're really going to think I'm a quality person? You know, something like that, versus just, you know what, I'm just Scott.
Let's talk about ego a little bit, because this does come into play on this day, and this is the point where Seth Abram would. Come in with some amazing quote.
We miss him today.
In case you haven't noticed, as we said on the last episode, Seth is on assignment, on vacation with him and Sarah with their four beautiful kids. So they're having a great time. But let's talk a little bit about ego. And because we, you know, ego, we need it. You know, it's what? It's where we get our self-esteem, our self-importance. So there's an aspect of it that we need, but there's an aspect of it that becomes controlling that wants to keep us stuck, in the shadows, right? And mm-hmm. And to Anna, to your point, it's saying the cost is too great to, you know, be more vulnerable. You're going to be scorned. You're going to be rejected. So stay hidden.
Right.
So our ego we need it, but it also can hold us back.
Right. And I think it's so important. I think our ego tends to want us to like hide our shadow side, right? To yeah. only present what's shiny instead of being maybe honest about things in our lives that are difficult or challenging or less than beautiful. But it is so important to remember, y'all, shadows don't exist without bright light. So in order to embrace those things about you that are less than perfect, you also have to reconcile the fact that that means there's something really bright inside of you, right? Casting that shadow. And so not to run from it, not to be afraid of it, not to hide in it, but to just recognize that humans are very multifaceted and we are complicated and we are not perfect. And that is absolutely how we are designed to be.
So the ego, Anna, that is just beautiful the way you just said that, because the fact that we have shadows is indicated there's some light too. Wow. Like
bright light, right? The brighter the light, the longer the shadow.
Yeah, we need to be reminded of that. Yeah. A couple things about ego, and you guys weigh in on some of this. Scott, you were saying it tries to control, right? So what would be the opposite of that? It would be a surrendering and unfolding, mm-hmm. that things are unfolding as they should. And mm-hmm. right. What are some of the other ways that ego, what is directed by more fear of the past, fear of the worries of the future? Yeah.
Ego's voice, I believe, is a source of condemnation. It's where, you know, condemnation is able to attach itself to my life. And so, you know.
And that is typically in the past?
Right. It's for things I've done or just, yeah. As I've said before, I'm a lot of regret is where things I wish I would have done differently. Or things I wish I would have done and I didn't do, or things that I did I wish I didn't do, and then I latch on to those and the condemning voice of that. And so I think that if we can view setbacks and breakdowns as actually breakthroughs, that you know what I'm struggling here. Here it is. I open that up. Now the light has an opportunity to really shine in there. And reframe me and restore me and resurrect me to my true self. And I like what Anna was saying, just that I think this is a big part of restore is that we believe in every human being is inherent goodness, every human being, no matter what we have done, what mistakes we've made, what we struggle with, there's this voice that says, that is not who you are. I created you beautifully, you know. And you know, when you hear people's stories and you hear how hard and horrible, actually, a lot of people's lives have been, and they're still turned out to be good people, but they still struggle in secret in the shadow life. Again, Brené Brown's talking about, in Dr. Thompson, you've got to find space where that can be healed, and it can't be healed in isolation. It just can't.
Yeah. I think a large part of our ego is very protective of us. Like that's mm-hmm. the mechanism in us that keeps us, you know, tries to keep us protected. And that is also the opposite of vulnerability, right? And vulnerability mm-hmm. is where we heal, right? So instead of allowing our ego to try to protect by covering up those shadow sides, like finding a safe space, a sacred community, you know, a benevolent witness to things in our lives that have been painful or are ugly or imperfect, and not to stay there, but to be able to expose that aspect of ourselves and be affirmed in the light that is coming from us that also casts those shadows. And I think that there's no more beautiful thing.
Yeah, what Anna was saying, George, on page 241 of the book, that last part talked about what Richard Rohr said, that the ego and the false self hate change more than anything else in the world. And the mind is the primary control tower, Richard Rohr writes. No wonder Jesus said we had to lose ourselves to find ourselves. We have to let go to be found. And that all of a sudden, that just takes on a whole new meaning for me. Here I am, you know, and I don't know. Something has happened to me even recently. I've become more vulnerable than I've ever been about even areas of my life. And I do want to say this, that I think we do our groups co-ed. And I find it that if I just had a group of men I'm talking to, I can get some healing. But if in a co-ed group where you get a male and a female perspective, it requires even greater vulnerability. But the greater the vulnerability, the greater the healing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want people to know, that whether it's our groups or anybody's groups, but there's so much power, I believe, in co-ed groups that you cannot get just, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm a man, I just talk to a man about my struggle, because you can only give me a perspective
right.
from a male's.
You're only getting a limited perspective.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I want to come back to something that Anna said. You were talking about how we protect ourselves, which is the natural human instinct when we've been hurt or wounded or injured in some way, or, you know, life has brought a lot of disappointment. The natural impulse is to throw up the shields and protect. But I'm just wondering, like, when we do that, we also kind of close ourselves off to the joy and the infinite possibilities of the present moment.
Absolutely.
So, like, of course, every human being who's been wounded or hurt is going to self-protect. But I think what you guys do and what we're talking about is that maybe we need some distance, maybe we need to put up some boundaries and create some space, but ultimately we all have to move back into that place of opening up some of that protection a little bit to find that there really is a possibility in this present moment that is going to bring us forward, right? Is going to move us out of the shadows into the light. And I wonder if you could just, for someone who right now is just so closed off because they've just been so hurt and dinged and wounded, how would you encourage them to...
Well, I would say, again, we heal very slowly in isolation, especially emotionally. I mean, that is just a very slow healing process. And, you know, in order to really get thorough healing, we have to expose the wound and we have to allow people to love us, right, as we are, wounded as we are, broken as we are. And that involves risk. And that's really, and not to minimize that, because I recognize if you are profoundly wounded, especially emotionally, it is really hard to risk showing somebody that really ugly wound. But it's not gonna be healed unless it's exposed, right? I mean, you just think about a physical wound, right? Like, it has to be tended to. If you just keep it bound up, it's gonna fester. It's not gonna heal. It has to be properly cared for. And I think that's the same with our emotional wounds. We have to find a safe place to be able to express the depth of our wounding. We have to allow ourselves to be open to healing. We also have to allow ourselves to be open to the possibility that we could get wounded again. And that's really hard, but we don't know what possibilities we're closing ourselves off to. What goodness lies in store if we don't open ourselves up to it, right? And that's the thing about being open. Good things can come in and not so good things can come in. Boundaries are important so that you're trying to let in only the good things. But, I mean, boundaries aren't always impermeable, right? Fences can be broken. But unless we're willing to open the gate and let things in, I mean, we're going to have a really limited experience to what is possible in our lives, both good. More good, you know, I think we're closing ourselves off to more good than we are keeping out what's bad, because that hurt will just continue to build if it's not exposed.
Scott, what do you say to someone that the risk of being vulnerable seems too great right now and they just feel like maybe I want to stay hidden?
I think of what Dr. Greenspan wrote about in her book on just this, the risk, the vulnerability of being human. And even what C.S. Lewis says, if you risk anything, love anything, you know, even loving a dog, you know, you risk being hurt. But if you're going to, he says, otherwise, if you're not willing to make that risk, just put yourself in a pine box now. I think what Anna's makes a good point is I think the fear of not wanting to be seen can be greater often than the opportunity and the willingness it takes to expose myself to you. But yet, and again, that's what Dr. Thompson said, that there's no other way and again, peer-to-peer healing, I believe, is the most powerful. And Dr. Thompson talked about that again, that, you know, he was a therapist, but he said there's nothing as powerful as a small group healing community peer-to-peer. By the way our brains were created and just the way that intimacy really connects us. But if I share with you my truth that has just been keeping me locked into this box, this shadow side, and I open myself up and I share it to you, you guys can shine a light, a divine mirror onto me that I cannot get alone. And the very last chapter of this, I mean, last paragraph of this chapter, Sir Richard Rohr writes, "We have been graced for a truly sweet surrender. If we can radically accept being radically accepted for nothing, or grace would not be grace at all." I love that.
Radically love accepted. That.
For nothing.
Yes. Just accept it is what you're saying then.
Exactly. Here I am.
As we all should be. Truth. Every human has innate, inestimable value. Just because of the sheer fact that we're all created in God's image.
I've seen so many people in our groups who are very successful by the world's standards. They sit in those groups and they weep because they've never been fully known. Mm-hmm. And they talk about things. No matter how much success they have outside in the world, inwardly, they feel they're a failure. They feel they're not loved. And they, because our society just promotes a false self. It just does. And with social media that's grown into our current world, it's brutal. It's brutal. So go get in a group. Go find a restore group. You know, but to me, it's the difference between you can be alive and not really be alive.
Yeah, not living.
Mm-hmm. So when someone looks at us and radically accepts us for nothing, that's the light, isn't it?
Love when should never be earned.
Yeah, and when that gets shined on us, it mm-hmm. opens us up to endless possibilities.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, I want to end with this, and Scott, and I just want both of you guys, Scott and Hannah, if you guys could just comment on this as we, as our listeners move on to their day, or whatever else is coming next for them. You said this, Scott, you said, what if I told you that the ego's death is really a sacred death? Mm. There is, this is where hope breaks in.
Yeah,
that's hard, but yeah, what did you mean by that?
Anna, you want to try, then I'll go.
I think, you know, I would just say, you know, ego being the false projected shiny side of self tries to avoid the risk of vulnerability. Mm. You're not being fully known and you're not living fully. So when we can die to that, we can be willing to risk being known thoroughly, completely, shiny, nasty, all the parts of us, right? That's when really we are most fully human. And I think that is the most sacred thing that can happen, is being fully known in all of your humanity.
That's when we're energized.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's when hope breaks in. Scott, final word.
If I can let my ego go and the controlling false self that I project out of this innate fear that if you really know me, you will not love me, you will abandon me, but I risk exposing my true self to you, that's the most sacred journey I think a person can take. And that, again, that verse where Jesus said, you who cling to yourselves, cling to your life, you're going to lose it. But if you lose your life, if you let it go, if you open yourself to grace, you'll find it. And there's just no other way. And I don't ever want to pretend it's easy. It is not. Vulnerability is terrifying to most of us. I have a friend who told me of a this guy was a leading soldier, and he trained hand-to-hand combat. This is one of the toughest, most hardest men, and he still taught hand-to-hand combat and guns. I mean, but the man said the most, that guy, that officer said the most dangerous, fear-based place he's ever been is being vulnerable in a group.
Mm. But I will say, it gets easier the more you practice it. It can be terrifying the first couple of times you do it, but when it becomes a lifestyle, when you begin to just show up authentically as who you are all the time, life doesn't feel so scary anymore.
But it is a sacred path. It mm-hmm. is. It's a sacred journey, and it's one I don't believe you can make alone at all. You have to have others. And so, as Brené Brown said again, find those places and sprint to them, because they give you life.
Well, friends, we're not asking you to kill the ego. We're just saying that removing the ego from the primary control tower of how you see only condemnation, the negative parts of yourself. Let's shut that down and let's move out of the shadows into the light. And Restore would love to help you do that. So please visit us online at restoresmallgroups.org and check out different options there, different resources, but we would love to join you on this journey. But as we go, remember, over every mountain there is a path, and the future rewards those who discover it and press on. So stay on the path and take care, friends. Hey, it's George. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Searching Inward podcast. If you've enjoyed listening or have benefited in any way from the podcast, we would love for you to come alongside and join us in the mission to bring hope and healing to the world. By considering becoming a monthly giver of even $5, you're making a huge impact in the ways we're able to serve. Please consider giving by going to restoresmallgroups.org/donate. Thanks.